Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. We mark each year's end with the hope for new beginnings. For Christians, it's celebrating the birth of Jesus, but nearly all religions acknowledge that the lengthening of daylight hours has spiritual as well as psychological implications for us. Light brings hope, but the world is still in the hands of a human race gifted by free will, so we find our hopes tempered, not only by our own history, but by prophecies of war and destruction, both ancient and modern. Still, we keep trying to reconcile our history with our faith. Meanwhile, NDEers recognize the simple truth staring us in the face. God is love. But even with that assurance, we can't help but wonder how God feels about our failure to love each other and God, to be a free will part of this creation. Is God angry, disappointed, or endlessly loving and forgiving even as we kill each other and kill the planet itself? The Hebrew and Christian Bibles and near-death experiences seem to give different answers to the question. To consider that, today's show includes some Hebrew Old Testament prophecy on the end times consequences of human free will, and concludes with one NDEer's vision of the results of mankind's free will in action. The Bible tends to frame the consequences of our free will in the same terms as the Garden of Eden story, while the NDE report that follows describes God's sadness at the old earth's destruction, though God's love for us continues regardless. But all this prophecy still remains subject to our free will choices. The outcome still remains our free will choice, right up until the end. The Bible readings that follow come from a show we did 10 years ago titled, Are We Approaching the End Times? Back then, I thought nuclear war would be the probable cause, but since then, global warming, with melting ice caps triggering potential volcanoes and releasing methane pockets of pollution, along with earthquakes and possible plagues, could invoke the end of human life. Those environmental killers are the result of human free will behaviors as well. Following the Bible passages, I'll conclude with the end times description from an NDEer, Erica McKenzie, who experienced it in the presence of a sorrowful but loving God.
I have to admit having a longtime fascination with the topic of end times. I even devoted a master's thesis to the subject back in the 1990s. I had set all that aside, though, until recently, when it became clear that Vladimir Putin was making a dramatic move into Syria with plans to confront U.S. and ally forces in defense of Syrian President Assad's dictatorial government. It seems one of the key ingredients in biblical end times prophecy is the idea that a Russian leader will have an evil thought, and that thought leads Russia into fighting a war in the Middle East, which seems to be what's going on right now. Back in the 1960s, as the New Age movement was taking off, there was a rebirth of interest in prophecy. The ancient cryptic prophecies of Nostradamus, for instance, 20th century sleeping visions of Edgar Cayce, and all those predictions were discussed by the New Agers, while the end times churches talked of Hal Lindsey's book, The Late Great Planet Earth, and how the prophecies of the books of Daniel and Revelation portrayed an angry God fed up with the dissipation of those very New Age types with their drugs and free love. God was going to punish the reprobates, while fundamental Christians would be spirited away in a rapture guaranteed to separate the good guys from the bad guys. Some religious fundamentalists still think the end will come when God has had enough and decides to destroy the world with an asteroid and earthquakes, lightning, and the like. I'm convinced that if these Bible prophecies are fulfilled, it will be because humanity alone, you and me, without any urging from God, will do it to ourselves. The fact that Bible-aged prophets would say God inflicts it is because They had no idea, in their wildest imaginings, that we would have had weapons of mass destruction as awesome as ballistic missiles with multiple hydrogen bombs attached. If they had had visions of skin melting off whole populations and the elements themselves melting, they could only have thought God was doing it, not us. People themselves, they thought, would never have that kind of destructive power. They had no idea that within the period of one generation, we could go from warfare on horseback to nuclear holocaust. I myself was born a few days before the first above-ground tests of the atomic bomb, and I may yet live to see a nuclear Third World War. The decision, I believe, is up to us. For those of you who think the Armageddon story is all nonsense, answer me this. Really, do you think the current political leadership in the world is wise enough and restrained enough to avoid nuclear war? The texts blame God, of course, but think of the leadership in Russia and China, North Korea and South Korea, Pakistan, Israel and India, Europe, and, of course, the United States. Well, we'll begin this passage from the Bible's book of Isaiah, chapter 24. See, the Lord is going to lay waste the earth and devastate it. He will ruin its face and scatter its inhabitants. It will be the same for priest as for people, for the master as for the servant, for the mistress as for her servant, for seller as for buyer, for borrower as for lender, for debtor as for creditor. The earth will be completely laid waste and totally plundered. The Lord has spoken this word. The earth dries up and withers. The world languishes and withers. The heavens languish with the earth. The earth is defiled by its people. They have disobeyed the laws, violated the statutes, and broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore, a curse consumes the earth. Its people must bear their guilt. Therefore, earth's inhabitants are burned up, and very few are left. The new wine dries up and the vine withers, all the merrymakers groan, the joyful timbrels are stilled, the noise of the revelers has stopped, the joyful harp is silent. No longer do they drink wine with a song, the beer is bitter to the drinkers. The ruined city lies desolate, the entrance to every house is barred. In the streets they cry out for wine, all joy turns to gloom, all joyful sounds are banished from the earth. The city is left in ruins, its gate is battered to pieces. So will it be on the earth and among the nations as when an olive tree is beaten or as when gleanings are left after the grape harvest. They raise their voices, they shout for joy. From the west they acclaim the Lord's majesty. Therefore in the east give glory to the Lord, exalt the name of the Lord, the God of Israel, in the islands of the sea. From the ends of the earth we hear singing, glory to the righteous one. But I said, I waste away, I waste away. Woe to me, the treacherous betray. With treachery, the treacherous betray. Terror and pit and snare await you, people of the earth. Whoever flees at the sound of terror will fall into a pit. Whoever climbs out of the pit will be caught in a snare. The floodgates of the heavens are opened, the foundations of the earth shake. The earth is broken up, the earth is split asunder, the earth is violently shaken. The earth reels like a drunkard, it sways like a hut in the wind, so heavy upon it is the guilt of its rebellion that it falls never to rise again. In that day the Lord will punish the powers in the heavens above, and the kings on the earth below. They will be herded together. Like prisoners bound in a dungeon, they will be shut up in prison, and be punished after many days. The moon will be dismayed, the sun ashamed, for the Lord Almighty will reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem and before its elders with great glory. And that's from Isaiah 24, that's verses 1 through 23. It's poetry of a very sad nature. Then there's this prophecy from the prophet Ezekiel concerning peoples of the north, Gog, Magog, Meshach, Tubal, etc. It's very interesting these names are used because These names are the ancient tribes that inhabited the area, what we now call Russia, or Russian suburbs, if you will. It's peoples from the far north. So when you hear Gog in this text, or any of those names, think Russia. And it's all about Russia invading Israel. So this begins with verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, set your face against Gog, Russia, of the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech, which some people think is a derivation of the city of Moscow, and Tubal. And then it says, Persia, Cush, and Put will be with them. Now that, of course, is Iran, and there is an alliance right now between Russia and Iran, which is more than coincidence, I think. Persia, Cush, and Put will be with them, all with shields and helmets. Also Gomer with all its troops and Beth Togarma from the far north with all its troops, the many nations with you. Get ready. Be prepared, you and all the hordes gathered about you, and take command of them. After many days, you will be called to arms. In future years, you will invade a land that has recovered from war, whose people were gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel. And this, of course, sounds like the restoration of Israel when the Jews came from all over the world to repopulate it. Whose people were gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. They had been brought out from the nations, and now all of them live in safety. You and all your troops and the many nations with you will go up, advancing like a storm. You will be like a cloud covering the land. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. On that day, thoughts will come into your mind. This is the evil thought that enters the leader's mind. And you will devise an evil scheme. You will say, I will invade a land of unwalled villages. I will attack a peaceful and unsuspecting people, all of them living without walls and without gates and bars. I will plunder and loot and turn my hand against the resettled ruins and the people gathered from the nations, rich in livestock and goods, living at the center of the land. Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish and all her villages will say to you, have you come to plunder? Have you gathered your hordes to loot, to carry off silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, and to seize much plunder? Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, to Russia, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. In that day, when my people Israel are living in safety, will you not take notice of it? You will come from your place in the far north. You will, and many nations with you, and these, of course, are all of the various small tribes, the small countries that existed then, which have been combined into the larger nation of Russia. All of them riding on horses, a great horde, a mighty army. And of course, all they could envision when they were having their dreams of war were horseback. You will advance against my people, Israel, like a cloud that covers the land. In days to come, Gog, I will bring you against my land, so that the nations may know me when I am proved holy through you before their eyes. This is what the Sovereign Lord says, it goes on. This is, we're now to verse 17. You are the one I spoke of in former days by my servants, the prophets of Israel. At that time, they prophesied for years that I would bring you against them. This is what will happen in that day when Gog attacks the land of Israel. My hot anger will be aroused, declares the Sovereign Lord. In my zeal and my fiery wrath, I declare that at that time there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. And when you hear the word earthquake in this prophecy and others, think of the repercussions of an all-out nuclear holocaust. The fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the beasts of the field, every creature that moves along the ground, and all the people of the face of the earth will tremble in my presence. The mountains will be overturned, the cliffs will crumble, and every wall will fall to the ground. I will summon a sword against Gog on my mountains, declares the Sovereign Lord. Every man's sword will be against his brother. I will execute judgment on him with plague and bloodshed. I will pour down torrents of rain, hailstones and burning sulfur on him and on his troops and on the many nations with him. That's Ezekiel 38, 1 through 22. And notice recurring earth shaking and fire that comes out of these descriptions, because that's, if you were envisioning nuclear war, that's what you would be seeing. Here's one from the prophet Zechariah. Bear in mind that these are all Old Testament readings, where this is some of this hundreds of years before Jesus. This is the plague which the Lord will strike all the nations that fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh will rot while they are still standing on their feet. Doesn't that sound like radiation? Their eyes will rot in their sockets, and their tongues will rot in their mouths. On that day, people will be stricken by the Lord with great panic. They will seize each other by the hand and attack one another. Which is an interesting image. Seize each other by the hand and attack one another. Judah, too, will fight at Jerusalem. The wealth of all the surrounding nations will be collected. Great quantities of gold and silver and clothing. A similar plague will strike the horses and mules, camels and donkeys, and all the animals in those camps. Of course, radiation kills the animals just as readily as it does the people. So those are some of the Old Testament references to a Russian invasion of the Middle East, culminating in what sounds like a worldwide nuclear conflagration. Now, let's take a look at some of the New Testament readings on the matter. And this is, I've abridged some of this just for a matter of time, and also because Jesus talks a lot about false prophets that may or may not pertain. Matthew 24. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came to him to call his attention to its buildings. Do you see all these things? He asked. And this is in response to their saying, look at this, isn't this great? Truly, I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will all this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And Jesus answered, and here we skip to verse 10. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people because of the increase of wickedness. The love of most will grow cold. And I think we can see some of that happening in society right now. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. And then he goes on in verse 15. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. And this, by the way, would be on the site of the temple that's been destroyed, but it is still the site. And this is plays a key role, of course, in all of the prophecies about Israel. It's the Temple of the Mount, the location where the first temple of Solomon was built. Let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down to take anything out of the house. In other words, this is going to come really fast, and you've got to get out of town. Let no one in the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the south, for then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. And in 28, wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. And then Jesus quotes from Isaiah. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Now, after a nuclear war, no doubt, there'd be so much dirt and dust in the air, probably radioactive, that none of the light from the sun or the moon would be clearly visible at that point. Stars falling from the sky could very well be missiles raining down, other weaponry. And the heavenly bodies will be shaken. I think just the vibrations of the earth from a bombing like that would be enough to make everything seem to be unstable. And then Jesus gives us a clue as to when this might happen. He makes reference to Israel, which of course was Israel in those days. Israel symbolized by the fig tree. And this reference interpreters take to mean the reestablishment of Israel and the generation dating from 1948. This is verse 32. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree, Jesus says. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, in other words, when Israel is once again flourishing, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near right at the door. That is the end. Truly, I tell you, this generation of the rebirth of Israel will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. And then, of course, we have to look at the book of Revelation. This is John of Patmos, his visions. The story goes that he lived in a cave when he was writing this. You can imagine him in a dark place, either dreaming or envisioning a final destruction. The sixth angel sounded his trumpet, and I heard a voice coming from the four horns of the golden altar that is before God. It said to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates, and the four angels who had been kept ready for this very hour and day and month and year were released to kill a third of mankind. A third of mankind. The number of the mounted troops was twice 10,000 times 10,000. I heard their number. And by the way, that's 200 million is the number of the size of the Chinese army today. The horses and riders I saw in my vision looked like this. Now, as you hear this, envision heavy weaponry and try to see it in the eyes of a first century person living in a cave. Their breastplates were fiery red, dark blue, and yellow as sulfur. The heads of the horses resembled the heads of lions, and out of their mouths came fire, smoke, and sulfur. A third of mankind was killed by the three plagues of fire, smoke, and sulfur that came out of their mouths. The power of the horses was in their mouths and in their tails, where the guns would be mounted, for their tails were like snakes, having heads with which they inflict injury. The rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues still did not repent of the works of their hands. They did not stop worshiping demons and idols of gold, silver, and bronze, stone, and wood, idols that cannot see or hear or walk. Nor did they repent of their murders, their magic arts, their sexual immorality, or their thefts. That's Revelation 9, 13 through 21. And then from Revelation 16, then they gathered the kings together in the place that in Hebrew is called Armageddon. The seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and out of the temple came a loud voice from the throne saying, "It is done." Then there came flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. No earthquake like it has ever occurred since mankind has been on earth. So tremendous was the quake, the great city split into three parts, and the cities of the nations collapsed. God remembered Babylon the Great and gave her the cup filled with the wine of the fury of his wrath. Every island fled away, and the mountains could not be found. From the sky, huge hailstones, each weighing about 100 pounds, sounds like weaponry to me, fell on people, and they cursed God on account of the plague of hail, because the plague was so terrible.
The following near-death experience excerpt concerning Earth's end comes from an interview with Erica McKenzie. Her complete interview can be found in our show of June 30th, 2025, titled Earth's Fiery End.
I had so many lessons, and the last lesson right before I left heaven with God, I'd like to just briefly share with you, if that's okay.
Of course.
And I call that lesson a new earth. And until this point, I had only felt the most overwhelming, unconditional love in the presence of God this entire time. Yet suddenly, at this time, I was overcome by something else. And it was an overwhelming sadness, and it was coming from God. And I had to know why he was feeling so sad. And as soon as that thought entered my mind, God motioned towards the stars. And there in the distance, in front of me, appeared the earth. It was beautiful. And I thought about my family, and my husband, and my friends, my classmates, my kids, and they were still on earth. I instantly knew where they were. I knew they were safe, and I knew they were happy, and I knew exactly what they were doing. I was given the knowledge that one day we would all be together again, and until then, they'd be fine. In fact, we're always together, and there is a bridge, and it exists between heaven and earth. It really does. And as I slowly watched the earth spin in the distance, flames began to spread from the bottom of the earth upward. Brilliant orange, yellow flames, they engulfed the entire planet, shooting into space, and I panicked. And I thought, oh my gosh, my family's down there, my children are down there. And once again, right in front of me appeared those glasses. I turned away, I was so scared. The last time I put on the glasses, I could see what I wasn't able to see before. And I was terrified. I didn't want to look through the glasses, but I didn't have a choice. The glasses were moving towards my face, and again, my hands automatically reached out, and they guided me to put my glasses on, pulled them near. And once those glasses were on, reluctantly, I had to open my eyes, and I was horrified. The earth, it was engulfed in flames, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. And I heard God say, "Now look." But together, we both looked again, and this time I looked between the flames, and I could see these little streaks. They were gold, white, silver lights, and they were so powerful. They were lifting off the earth and flying over our heads into heaven, which was behind us. And I remember focusing my eyes on them, and all at once, I had this knowing that, oh my gosh, these were souls. They were people lifting off the earth. They were unharmed by the flames. And at first, there were hundreds and thousands, and then thousands more joined in. And there was such strength and beauty and splendor in the light from each of these souls. And I recognized it, and it was the light. It was the rock that God had shown me during my lesson of the rippling effect. And I remembered his words, and he said, "The light is of me, and I am with you." And I watched them as this light. It gave all of them power to lift off the earth and away from the flames. And it acted like a shield, a force field. It offered protection from the flame. And I said to God, "Look, God, it's okay. See, all the souls are safe. I can see them through the flames. They're coming into heaven." I was so happy that all the souls were saved. But I could feel God's sadness, and it remained. And I didn't understand my feeling of joy, and his of despair. And I was thinking, "God, why are you still so sad?" And then he said to me, "Erica, it's free will. And with the gift of life, I give you the gift of free will." And I didn't understand, "Why can't you save them? Don't you love them too?" And he said to me, "I love all of my children. And that is why I let them choose to have that connection with me or not." And I remember thinking, "Connection?" And then God said to me, "Love. Love is the connection that joins us together." And I finally understood why he was so sad, and how difficult it must be to love someone so much that you allow them to make their own choices, even if it causes them pain, even if they were left behind. And I realized that this is what God was doing. I could feel how much it hurt him to watch those souls who chose not to have that connection with him of their own free will. And God told me there was going to be a new earth. And we continued to watch as the last souls of the earth, they left. And I turned with God, and we looked at heaven, and I've never seen anything so magnificent. In all of its glory, it was so big, it made the earth appear like a speck of dust in comparison. And I watched the souls descend into heaven, God's new earth, and heaven was a planet. And I knew that this golden planet. It was exactly where I belonged. It was the place that was filled with love and peace, and my heart, it longed to be where the unconditional love reigned. In such, it's such a magnificent place. And together, God and I shared a lifetime of lessons. And on Earth, you know, we measure everything by time, but in heaven, time as we know it on Earth does not exist. And I knew I was staying in heaven. I never wanted to be parted from God again.
Humanity may be a team on a losing streak so far, but the game isn't over yet. We have free will choices to make in the coming days that can still change the course of history. Prophecy is not true unless it actually happens. Let's make some early New Year's resolutions to love better starting now. Well, thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear this show again or any of our more than 500 archived ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE radio site and hit the past shows button, or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE radio library. And listen again next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone for more NDE radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.